From West Point to Quakerism by Mike Keller, Pendle Hill Pamphlet 389. The pamphlet begins with two quotations, the first from Matthew chapter 8, verses 8 and 13. The centurion answered and said, "Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed." And Jesus said unto the centurion, "Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done unto thee." There's a second quotation. This one's from John Woolman. "I have often felt a motion of love to leave some hints in writing of my experience of the goodness of God." July 3, 1967. The day began in fog. My brother Bill drove me to West Point. In the car, I was too nervous to talk much. We drove around the plane, the parade ground, and pulled into a parking lot. We shook hands and had a few words. "Good luck," he said. I stepped onto a dull green army bus with other young men for the short ride into the barracks area. Soon we were standing in line in the high-ceilinged mess hall, which seats 4,000 cadets at once at each meal. We took our turns standing with arms out to be measured for uniforms. My duffel bag became heavy with piles of underwear, socks, shoes, belts, shirts, and trousers. We changed into gym shorts, white t-shirts, black socks, and low-cut black shoes, a taste of the humiliation to come. In groups, we were led through a sally port, one of the dark arching gateways into Old Central Area, which was surrounded by barracks. The fog had lifted. The mid-morning sky was hazy and bright. Standing at attention, I met my first upperclassman, dressed in a starched white shirt with epaulets on his shoulders. "Mister," he said, "report to the man in the red sash. Salute. Say, 'Sir, new cadet, your last name, reports to the man in the red sash. Do you understand?'" I walked up the stairs to the senior in the red sash standing on the stoops. I saluted as I was told, but my legs were shaking. "Can you stop shaking, mister?" he said in a loud voice. "Yes, sir," I said. "Well, then, why don't you?" Even though I knew I was standing where 20,000 other young men had stood, I could not stop shaking. By late afternoon, the sun shone brightly as 1,000 new cadets marched to Trophy Point to take the oath. Under my starched white shirt and wool trousers, I felt a dirty sweat. We had marched in squads around the blacktop in Central Area and New South Area barracks, learning to salute and to do the about face. My neck itched from hair falling down my collar, and my back ached from trying to stand straight all day. For years, I did not want to talk about my journey from growing up in a military family, going to West Point, and then becoming increasingly uncomfortable with military service. I did not know how to talk about it, but I needed to explain and figure out for myself what it all meant. 9 years after the first day at West Point, my wife, Becky, took me to a Quaker meeting at Sandy Spring, Maryland. The way had begun to open, and I felt a turning in my life. But on that first day at West Point, I had no idea where this journey was taking me. I have gradually found a different kind of service for which I feel better fitted. I learned the importance of attending to a creative self, which would coincide with my experience of Quaker faith and worship. From reading Quaker journals, which have a long tradition, I came to see that it might be possible to share my story with others who have similar concerns and struggles. A journal today, even a brief pamphlet, may take the form of a collage or a mosaic. Through the process of writing, I feel the importance of spiritual teachers, supportive friends, and loving family. I have gained a better understanding of regret and the need for affirmation. of cowardice and courage, of my artistic life and my life journey, of duty and spiritual direction. As a child in the late 50s and early 60s, I grew up on or near air bases where the military lived in a bright light of victory and high morale. My parents and their friends had won World War II. Outside the main gate to Larson Air Force Base, Washington, the billboard said, "Peace is our profession." With the Cold War and the beginnings of the space race, there was a sense of excitement, adventure, and honor in the air. In our small houses on various air bases, I did my homework at a round dining room table that my parents had their friends engrave with a wood burner. As kids, we rode our bikes down to the flight line in the bright sun. The fighters, refueling tankers and bombers, were parked across the vast runway, flat like the center of a continent, a quiet place with a gentle breeze, and then the roar of jet engines. On some days, my father let me walk with him into the airplane hangars, and sometimes I got to climb into the planes themselves with their smells of jet fuel, cockpit metal, and nylon. Once, when we lived in Presque Isle, Maine, under the clouds, dark like the ocean, the rain froze, and we ice skated down the street and into the runway, the biggest skating rink in the world. Later, at Moses Lake, Washington, my father took me into a Titan missile silo, a kid's dream of tunnels and rooms far underground. In 1961, when I was 12, my brother Bill went to West Point. First-year cadets, plebes, could not go home for Christmas in those days, so we traveled to see him. From Washington, we took the Northern Pacific Railroad across the northern states, past snow-covered fields and distant forests, until we came to Chicago and then New York. In the gray days of late December, West Point's granite buildings were cold and looming. We visited Bill's barracks room with its green walls and saw his and his roommates' tightly made beds and open lockers with perfectly aligned underwear and toiletries. During one of the receptions held for the parents during the visit, my father and mother met Major General Westmoreland, the superintendent, and the next day, at the second reception, General Westmoreland remembered my father's name. My father retold this story later because he was glad to be acknowledged and because Westmoreland became the commanding general in Vietnam. Dignity, Latin, dignus, the quality of being worthy. Worth, Old English, wiorth, moral or personal value, deserving. Here I am, 4 years old, wearing shorts, standing near my mother who is seated on the grass. She is tickling me and we're laughing together. Her hair is fixed in old-fashioned style, her legs under her, her face radiant. She used to sing a song that repeated the lines, "Bless them all, bless them all." Her love for me had nothing to do with whether I was good or anything. It was beyond understanding. As she got older, she still loved me, even when dementia overtook her mind, as if, in her eyes, I was always that little boy. Later, when I felt a loss of dignity, I returned to my mother's love. My father was a great Air Force captain and a great line engineer. That is how I saw it as a kid. He loved being an officer, and the men he called his troops loved him. He drank hard, smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day, and often joked around. When I bothered him, he said, "Why don't you taxi into the bedroom and blow up?" He and my mother liked the Air Force social life and were active in the officers' club. They often had parties, and I watched the conversation in my pajamas from the hallway. The next morning, ashtrays overflowed with cigarette butts, and tables were cluttered with empty glasses. There is a World War II photo of my father as a handsome young lieutenant, with a thin mustache and his hat cocked at an angle. There's another photo of my mother laughing on a sofa, with a drink in one hand and a cigarette in the other. Flying in B-29s, Dad took part in the firebombings of Tokyo. Returning from his third mission, his B-29 ditched in the Pacific, and 5 men from the crew died, either going down with the plane or drifting away on the ocean. The same day, back in Chicago, my mother had a miscarriage and her father died. I suspect that my mother, after that, was never the same. My father and several others were rescued after spending several days on a small life raft. They were given a choice, and my father was the only one from that crew to choose to return to combat. He flew 30 more bombing missions over Japan. After the war, he got out of the military and worked for a company designing equipment for mining. 6 years later, when the Korean War came, he was recalled, still as a lieutenant, and he and my mother decided to stay in for a career. They had found a home in the military. My father and mother had a lot of courage. But I began to see that things were harder for my father than I realized. I did not really know what went on at his work. He had a run-in with a colonel, the details of which I never understood. You've been listening to Pendle Hill Pamphlet 389, From West Point to Quakerism by Mike Heller, narrated by Mark Helpsmeet. The music featured in this recording is from Come Spirit, Hymns for the Mountain Dulcimer by Matilda Navius. You can find more information about Pendle Hill publications, workshops, retreats, and services at pendlehill.org.